Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine the unseen gears grinding behind every stock trade, every investment decision, every euro moving across Europe. It's this vast, intricate machine, right?
Absolutely. A complex financial nervous system that just hums along, mostly out of sight for most people.
Exactly. And today we're pulling back the curtain on one of its most pivotal operators. I mean, a true architect of our global financial infrastructure.
A big one.
Yeah. We're embarking on a deep dive into the Deutsche Börse Group, DBG might hear us call it. They're headquartered in Frankfurt, Germany, but they're globally significant and way, way more than just a stock exchange.
That's the key takeaway right from the start. People hear Börse, they think stocks, but the reality is so much broader now.
So if you've ever wondered how the actual plumbing of finance works, you know, how capital gets raised, how trades are guaranteed, how your investments are ultimately secured, well, this deep dive is definitely for you. Our mission today is really to understand how DBG has profoundly transformed itself. They've gone from being, let's say, a traditional exchange operator
Right, transaction focus.
to becoming this diversified financial technology and data behemoth. We'll explore its strategic shifts, the competitive landscape it's navigating, and its, well, pretty ambitious vision for the future of finance.
And we're doing this by digging into some really comprehensive investment research we've gathered, trying to pull out the most critical insights for you.
You are.
And what's truly remarkable here, I think, is that Deutsche Börse isn't just reacting to the massive shifts happening in finance. They're not just responding.
They're proactive.
They are, in fact, actively shaping the next generation of financial markets. You really see this as we move further into this era, driven by digitalization and, well, sophisticated data-driven
Not
solutions.
yet.
So we'll try to connect these critical dots for you, showing not just what they do, but crucially, why their evolution profoundly impacts how you access and invest in markets. And honestly, it impacts the very stability of the global financial system.
It's that fundamental. Get ready for some genuine aha moments, hopefully, as we try to simplify this often complex world of market infrastructure.
Yeah, it can seem opaque from the outside.
It really can. We'll reveal some surprising facts about how global finance truly works behind the scenes and hopefully equip you with a shortcut to being exceptionally well-informed about a really crucial player in the European and increasingly the global economy.
Sounds good. Let's dig in.
Okay, so we've introduced Deutsche Börse Group, DBG, as a globally significant market infrastructure provider. That phrase itself, it sounds a bit abstract, doesn't it?
It does. A bit corporate, maybe.
Yeah, but its reach is truly massive. It touches almost every aspect of modern finance. We're talking about a distinctly European institution, headquartered, as we said, in Frankfurt, Germany.
Right, the heart of the Eurozone financial center, really.
Yet with this deeply embedded global footprint, DBG's operations span over 60 locations worldwide. They employ more than 15,000 people.
15,000, yeah. It gives you a sense of scale.
And they're serving clients not just across Europe, but reaching deep into the Americas, Asia Pacific. They are, I mean, literally everywhere the global markets operate.
So what does it actually do?
Right. At its core, what DBG provides is this full financial value chain. It's a completely vertically integrated business model.
And the vertical integration is key. We'll keep coming back to that.
We will. To really grasp it, imagine it like a complete ecosystem, or like we said before, a financial nervous system.
Right.
It covers the entire journey
From start to finish.
from the initial spark of an idea for a company to raise capital, maybe an IPO, right?
Or issuing bonds, yeah.
All the way through to the secure storage of assets after a trade has happened. So this means they offer platforms and processes for, well, everything.
Like what specifically?
Okay, companies issuing shares or bonds to raise capital, investors trading a huge array of financial instruments, stocks, derivatives like futures and options, ETFs, commodities, foreign exchange.
A very wide range.
Yes, the crucial process of clearing those trades.
Which is essentially guaranteeing them, right? Taking on the risk.
Exactly. Guaranteeing the trade happens even if one party defaults. Then settling them, which is the actual exchange of the cash for the securities.
The final handover.
And ultimately, the custody of those assets, making sure they're safely held and accounted for. It's a true end-to-end solution, meticulously designed.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this vertical integration, it's not just about offering convenience, like a financial supermarket.
No, it's more strategic than that.
Way more. It actually creates immense competitive advantages and operational efficiencies for all the market participants using their systems.
Oh, so.
Well, by offering that end-to-end solution, DBG builds this ecosystem that is incredibly difficult, I mean really difficult, for anyone else to replicate. It forms what economists call a very strong economic moat.
A moat, like a castle defense.
Exactly. A durable competitive advantage that protects its market share and ultimately its profitability. And this integrated approach, it hasn't just happened by accident.
No, it feels very deliberate.
It is. It's a deliberate evolution, really crystallized in the company's Horizon 2026 strategy. They unveiled that in November 2023.
Okay. Horizon 2026.
And this strategy marks a significant pivot. It's about transforming DBG from being, as you said, largely transaction-focused.
Right. Clipping tickets on trades.
Which often means being kind of at the mercy of market volatility.
Yeah.
Busy markets, good revenue. Quiet markets, not so good.
Yeah, that cyclicality.
Exactly. To becoming a diversified financial technology, fintech and data powerhouse.
Fintech and data. That sounds like where the value is shifting.
Precisely. The why behind this shift is critical. It's a strategic move towards capturing higher margin, more predictable, recurring revenue streams.
Recurring revenue. That's the holy grail for many businesses, isn't it? Less volatile.
Absolutely. And broadening their client base, too. They're particularly focusing on the buy side.
A buy side, meaning?
That's the institutional investors and asset managers. Think pension funds, mutual funds, hedge funds, the big players who manage vast sums of money. They need sophisticated tools and data.
Okay, so shifting focus towards those big asset managers.
Yes, and their more stable operational budgets rather than just relying on trading activity.
Right. Here's where it gets really interesting, I think, and it highlights that strategic pivot you just mentioned. This new investment management solutions segment, IMS.
IMS, yeah. This is central now.
It truly feels like a game changer for Deutsche Börse. It's like they've decided, okay, we need to build a whole new house on a stronger, more predictable foundation, moving beyond just collecting tolls on transactions.
A very good analogy.
So IMS was formally created in the fourth quarter of 2023, and it was specifically designed, as you said, to serve the entire value chain for those institutional investors and asset managers.
All their needs, from pre-trade analytics to post-trade reporting.
Exactly. This segment bundles their highest growth data-centric and software-as-a-service SaaS businesses.
SaaS subscription models. That's key for recurring revenue.
Absolutely. And the core of this new segment includes that landmark acquisition of SimCorp.
The good one. Nearly 4 billion euros.
Yeah, 3.9 billion. SimCorp is a leading provider of investment management software. That, along with their existing ISS, Istio XX, and Axioma businesses, these are all now under the IMS umbrella.
Right. ISS Istio XX brings governance, ESG data, indices. Axioma provides risk analytics. SimCorp provides the core portfolio management system. You put them together.
And you get a powerful offering for asset managers. These acquisitions and this new structure, they fundamentally reshape DBG's overall business mix. Makes it far more resilient, presumably.
That's the goal. Less cyclical, more predictable.
And the impact on revenue. It's been swift and significant. In 2024, IMS already accounted for 22% of the group's total revenue.
22%, almost a quarter of the business already. That shows its strategic importance right away.
It really does. Let's just zoom in on ISS D2XX for a moment because it's a particularly bright spot within IMS.
Yeah, ISS D2XX is a powerhouse in its own right.
It really is. This part of DBG holds the number one global position in governance advisory. They guide companies on best practices.
Helping shareholders and boards.
It's also a top three player globally in sustainability data and analytics ESG data, basically. That's a rapidly growing area.
Usually. Everyone wants ESG data now.
And it's the number two European equity index provider. Think DAX, Eurostoxx XX.
Benchmarks that are used everywhere.
But what really stands out here and ties right back to the strategy is its revenue predictability. Get this. Approximately 95% of its income is recurring.
95%. That's incredibly stable. It means asset managers, banks, they pay regular subscription fees for these vital services like data feeds, analytics, governance advice.
Exactly. It offers significant stability that isn't dependent on whether the market had a busy trading day or not.
And it's highly profitable, too. You noted a 44% adjusted EBITDA margin in 2024.
That's right, which indicates strong operational efficiency. And the growth potential.
Huge, I imagine.
Substantial. Its total addressable market, the TAM, is estimated at a massive $17 billion in 2024 and projected to grow to over $25 billion by 2029.
Wow. So there's a huge runway for continued expansion just within that ISS DAX business.
Absolutely. A massive opportunity. Now, while IMS is clearly the new strategic cornerstone, we shouldn't forget the trading and clearing segment. it remains a powerhouse.
The traditional heart of the business, you could say.
It is. It houses the group's more transaction-oriented businesses. These are the names you might recognize, the core of what many people think of when they imagine an exchange.
Like Eurex.
Eurex, exactly. Europe's leading financial derivatives exchange, trading complex contracts like futures and options. Then there's ECTRA.
The main market for German stocks and ETFs.
Right, the primary electronic trading venue there. Also, the European Energy Exchange, EEX.
For power, gas, emissions trading. A global commodity exchange, actually.
And 360T, which is a global foreign exchange, FX trading platform.
So a wide range of asset classes covered in trading.
Very wide. And critically, this segment also includes Eurex Clearing. That's the group's central counterparty, the CCP.
The CCP, the guarantor.
Right.
Absolutely vital infrastructure.
It acts as the buyer to every seller and the seller to every buyer, absorbing counterparty risk and guaranteeing trades. It's absolutely vital for market stability and risk management.
Can't function without its CCP for derivatives, really.
But it's important to remember, these trading and clearing businesses, they are inherently more cyclical. They're sensitive to market volatility.
Their revenues fluctuate more with the ups and downs in trading activity.
Exactly. Which is precisely why DBG is diversifying so aggressively with things like the IMS segment. They want to smooth out those earnings.
Yeah, it's perfect sense strategically.
Okay. Beyond the high-octane world of trading, there's another crucial, maybe quieter, engine of growth for DBG. Their fund services.
Oh, yes. Operating under the Clearstream brand.
That's right. This segment provides a global platform for processing and distributing investment funds. Think mutual funds, ETFs.
The back office plumbing for the fund industry.
Pretty much. And it benefits from a strong secular trend, a long-term ongoing trend of asset managers increasingly outsourcing their fund processing operations.
Why is that?
Well, think about it. Managing millions of individual fund transactions, subscriptions, redemptions, distributions, it's incredibly complex and costly.
So outsourcing saves asset managers time and money, letting them focus on investing.
Exactly. Which leads to consistent, steady growth for DBG's fund services. In fact, its assets under administration, the total value of funds it handles for clients, surpassed $700 billion by mid-2025.
700 billion euros.
Yeah.
That demonstrates immense scale in that space.
Huge scale. And finally, we have security services, also under the Clearstream brand. This covers the core post-trade activities.
Settlement custody.
Settlement, yes. The definitive exchange of cash and assets. Custody and safekeeping of those assets. And also collateral management, where assets are pledged to secure financial obligations.
All critical post-trade functions.
Right. Revenue here comes from transaction and custody fees, which are generally pretty stable. But critically, a significant portion also comes from net interest income, NII.
NII, from client cash balances.
Exactly. Earned on the vast cash balances held by clients for clearing and settlement purposes. Billions and billions in cash passing through.
Okay.
This NII component, often referred to as the treasury result, is highly cyclical. It's directly influenced by central bank interest rate policies.
Ah, so when interest rates go up, like they have recently.
DBG earns significantly more on these cash balances. It's been a big tailwind for them lately.
But if rates go down, that revenue stream shrinks.
Uh-huh.
So it adds to the cyclicality. In a way.
It does, which again reinforces the logic of diversifying into less rate-sensitive areas like IMS.
Understood.
So we've talked about this massive shift, this Horizon 2026 strategy, but ultimately, what's the real impact on the core stability of Deutsche Börse? Is it truly making them more resilient?
Or are they just swapping one set of risks for another? That's a fair question.
It seems they're intentionally making themselves less vulnerable to the ups and downs of the market. This de-risking of the business model seems central.
It absolutely is.
And you see it in the numbers, a significant increase in those recurring income streams, reaching 63% of total net revenue in 2023, and projected to be over 60% with the full consolidation of SimCorp in 2024.
That's a huge shift.
Yeah.
60% recurring revenue makes it a very different company than a traditional exchange that might have, say, 20 or 30%.
Exactly.
And it's not just a trade-off. By intentionally diversifying into these higher margin recurring revenue streams, particularly with IMS, they're fundamentally changing their risk profile.
How so? Fundamentally.
Well, historically, exchange operators like DBG were often, as we said, at the mercy of market volatility. Trading volumes dip, revenues dip, profits dip.
Right. Feast or famine sometimes.
Kind of. Now they're tapping into the much more stable operational budgets of asset managers. These firms need the software, the data, the analytics from IMS, regardless of short-term market swings. It's part of their essential operating infrastructure.
Less relying on fickle mood swings of the market, more on steady subscription fees.
Exactly. This structural change provides much greater earnings stability and predictability. It makes the group significantly more resilient to periods of low market volatility, which historically was always the Achilles heel for exchange operators.
Yep.
The strategic rationale behind creating IMS is precisely this. Shift the focus towards that stable operational spending of the asset management industry, rather than relying solely on often volatile transactional trading budgets. That's how they address the stability question head on.
Makes sense. And this brings us back to the power of that vertical integration we mentioned earlier. That seems to act as a real economic moat for them.
A very strong one. Think about it. Controlling the entire value chain from the indices, like the Euro STOXX 50.
Which underlie derivatives.
To the venues where those derivatives are traded, like Eurex, the CCP that clears them, Eurex Clearing.
Yeah.
And the depository that settles and holds the assets, Clearstream. Controlling all of that generates incredibly powerful network effects.
Network effects, like social media.
Sort of, yeah. In finance, it means more traders on Eurex leads to deeper liquidity, more buyers and sellers available at any time.
Which means better prices and faster execution for everyone.
Exactly. Which attracts more participants, which creates more liquidity. It's a powerful, virtuous cycle. It makes it very hard for participants to justify trading elsewhere, especially for core products.
And this integration must also translate into high switching costs for clients.
Immense switching costs. Once a bank or asset manager is deeply embedded in DBG's ecosystem, using their trading platform, their clearinghouse, their settlement system,
relying on their data,
benefiting from the operational efficiencies, the ability to net margin requirements across different activities, optimize collateral, the cost and disruption of moving your business elsewhere become incredibly high.
It's not just changing one vendor, it's replumbing their entire financial operations.
Precisely. This integrated model is so powerful, it even caught the eye of regulators in a big way. Remember the European Commission's 2017 decision to block DBG's proposed merger with the London Stock Exchange Group?
I do. That was a major event.
A key reason they blocked it was the conclusion that combining Eurex Clearing with LSEG's LCH, another huge clearer, would have created a de facto monopoly in clearing certain critical instruments, particularly derivatives.
Wow. So the regulator itself basically validated the strength of DBG's integrated model, particularly in clearing.
Exactly. That decision speaks volumes about the perceived competitive advantage and the systemic importance of DBG's integrated model, especially Eurex Clearing.
Now, you might think financial markets are just about companies competing, you know, survival of the fittest. But regulation plays a truly monumental role. It shapes the battlefield, the rules of engagement.
Oh, absolutely. Regulation is everything in this industry.
And in Europe, it presents this fascinating paradox, doesn't it? There's this regulatory push for more competition in trading.
Driven by MiFID II, mainly.
Right. While simultaneously, we're seeing the big players, DBG, Euronext, LSE Group, getting even bigger through consolidation and acquisitions.
It's real tension. Consolidation at the top, fragmentation underneath.
Exactly. We're witnessing this dynamic tension shaping the European exchange market. On one hand, major operators seeking scale and diversification. On the other, MiFID II, the Markets in Financial Instruments Directive 2A, was explicitly designed to dismantle national monopolies in trading.
To break the exchange's hold on their home markets.
Right, which led to trading being spread across not just the traditional regulated markets, but also these alternative venues called multilateral trading facilities, or MTFs.
Like CBO Europe, Turquoise.
And systematic internalizers, S, where banks execute client orders internally. So more choice, but also more complexity.
That's a critical observation.
Yeah.
And it leads us to wonder, how do you thrive, how do you maintain profitability, when the very act of trading itself is becoming a commodity, with razor-thin margins due to all this competition?
Yeah, how do you?
The answer, as Deutsche Börse clearly demonstrates, is to pivot, to shift your focus to where the new value lies.
Which is data analytics software.
Exactly. Let's look at MiFID II's game-changing impact. It was introduced back in 2018. Its primary goals were ambitious. Increase transparency across all trading, enhance investor protection, and level the playing field by encouraging competition.
Sounds good on paper.
But its consequences were far-reaching. and maybe in some cases unintended. For instance, it significantly increased competition by eliminating the old concentration rule.
What was that?
It basically required trading in listed shares to happen on the official stock exchange. MiFID II got rid of that.
Ah, opening the door for rivals.
Precisely. It allowed MPFs to directly compete with incumbent exchanges like Xetra or Euronext Paris, putting immense downward pressure on trading fees. MiFID II also mandated much enhanced pre-trade and post-trade transparency.
Making things less opaque.
Yes, trying to shine a light on pricing. It moved a lot of the previously murky over-the-counter or OTC trading onto regulated platforms or required reporting.
Okay.
However, one fascinating and perhaps slightly unintended consequence was the rise of market data as a major revenue source for exchanges.
How did that happen?
Well, this market fragmentation with trading spread across maybe dozens of venues created a huge demand from traders and investors for consolidated data feeds. They needed to see the whole picture.
Right, to find the best price.
So exchanges started increasingly selling their proprietary trading data, the bids, the offers, the trades happening on their own platforms. And this has become a very significant and high-margin revenue stream for them.
But you mentioned regulatory scrutiny.
Yes. This practice now faces significant regulatory scrutiny. End users, like asset managers of banks, argue that the exchanges are charging excessive prices for this essential data, leveraging their market power. It's a potential headwind we should keep an eye on.
Okay, so data became valuable, but maybe controversially so. What else did MiFID II do?
A big one was the unbundling of research. Previously, the cost of investment research from banks was often bundled into the trading commissions asset managers paid.
So you paid for trading, you got research free?
Kind of. MiFID got mandated that payments for trade execution and for research had to be separated. Asset managers had to explicitly pay for the research they consumed.
That must have shaken up the research industry.
Hugely. It significantly impacted asset managers and investment banks, altering revenue models across the industry. Some argue it led to less research coverage, especially for smaller companies.
Interesting. So overall, how did MiFID II influence DBG's strategy?
Well, by commoditizing the core trading function, by driving down those fees, MiFID II inadvertently but powerfully accelerated DBG's strategic imperative. It made the need to diversify into higher-value data, analytics, software, and post-trade services much more urgent.
It basically forced their hand, or at least sped things up.
You could say that. It made the creation of the IMS segment not just a good idea, but a strategic necessity to thrive in this new, much tougher environment for pure execution services.
Okay. Speaking of external forces reshaping finance, Brexit. That was a massive shakeup for the entire European financial landscape.
Seismic, really.
But it wasn't a loss for everyone, was it? For Deutsche Börse, it actually created a unique opportunity, almost a regulatory dividend, you could call it.
How so?
Well, the loss of passporting rights for UK-based financial firms was huge. They could no longer freely offer services across the EU from their London base.
Right, the automatic access was gone.
This forced a structural reshaping. A significant relocation of financial activity, especially trading and clearing of euro-denominated assets, had to move from London to EU financial centers.
Like Amsterdam, Paris, Dublin, and Frankfurt, of course.
And Frankfurt, DBG's home turf. Amsterdam, for instance, quickly surpassed London as Europe's largest share trading center right after Brexit took full effect. A stark illustration of this shift.
It's a symbolic moment.
And this shift has been further reinforced by policy-driven tailwinds from the EU itself. The EU is pushing for a strategic autonomy in finance.
Wanting to be less reliant on London, especially for critical infrastructure like clearing.
Exactly. Frameworks like EMR 3.0, that's the European Market Infrastructure Regulation, explicitly aim to reduce the EU's reliance on UK-based CCPs, particularly LCH in London, for clearing euro-denominated derivatives.
Which directly benefits
Eurex Clearing in Frankfurt. It provides a durable, policy-driven boost for them to capture market share that was previously concentrated in London. It's a clear case where geopolitical and regulatory shifts directly translate into a competitive advantage for DBG.
Fascinating. Geopolitics driving financial flows.
Definitely. Now let's shift to technology frontiers, cloud and digital assets.
Okay, the future stuff. What's truly fascinating here is that the emergence of digital assets isn't just about Bitcoin or Ethereum.
No.
It's about fundamentally rethinking how traditional assets, stocks, bonds, funds, can be issued, traded, and settled using new technologies like blockchain or DLT. This is potentially revolutionary for market infrastructure providers like DBG.
Okay, tell me more. But first, the baseline tech.
Right. The entire financial industry is, at its core, technology-driven. It requires continuous, massive investment in low latency, high capacity infrastructure. You need speed and reliability for electronic trading, algorithmic trading, high-frequency trading, HFT.
Where milliseconds matter.
Exactly. Deutsche Börse is actually a leader here in migrating to cloud-native architecture. They have a major partnership with Google Cloud.
Why the cloud?
For scalability, speed, efficiency, flexibility. By early 2024, an impressive 60% of DBG's computing capacity was already in the cloud. That's a significant commitment.
60%. Wow. Okay, now back to digital assets.
Right. The EU's MiCA regulation markets in crypto assets, which came into force in 2023, is crucial here.
Lika, I heard a lot about that.
It provides a harmonized legal framework across all EU member states for crypto assets. This regulatory clarity is a game changer. It allows regulated institutions like Deutsche Börse to enter the market with confidence, knowing the rules of engagement.
So they know what they can and can't do.
Precisely. And while DBG is indeed launching a regulated platform for existing cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin.
Okay, so they are doing that.
Yes. But the core strategic play for them is much larger. It's leveraging distributed ledger technology, DLT, the tech behind blockchain, for the tokenization of traditional financial assets.
Tokenization, meaning representing stocks or bonds as digital tokens.
Exactly. Taking real-world assets and representing their ownership as digital tokens on a blockchain or similar ledger. This could truly revolutionize how these assets are issued, settled, and held in custody.
Kyle, what are the benefits?
Potentially much faster settlement times, maybe minutes instead of days. Lower costs due to fewer intermediaries. Greater transparency. Programmability, you could embed rules directly into the token itself.
Like automatic dividend payments or compliance checks?
Exactly. It opens up a world of possibilities. And DBG wants to be the infrastructure provider for this new world.
Building the digital rails for the future of finance.
That's the ambition. It's a massive long-term opportunity. However, we also need to talk about the, let's say, the shadowy world of competition from alternative venues.
Yes, the non-exchange play.
Because the market isn't just the big traditional exchanges anymore. The post-MiFID SICA landscape is characterized by intense competition. You have pan-European MTFs like Cboe Europe and Turquoise.
We mentioned them earlier.
They aggressively compete for order flow and cash equities, often using lower fees and faster technology as their weapons.
Trying to peel off volume from the incumbents.
Exactly. Then you have what are known as dark pools.
Dark pools? Sounds ominous.
They're essentially private trading venues run by banks or independent operators. The key feature is they don't display pre-trade information. You can't see the bids and offers before a trade happens.
Why would you want that?
They capture market share, particularly for large institutional block trades. Imagine a pension fund wanting to sell 1 million shares of a company. If they put that order on the public exchange, the price might move against them before they can execute the whole thing.
Right. Everyone sees the big seller and front runs them.
Potentially. In a dark pool, they can execute that large block trade without revealing their hand beforehand, reducing that market impact cost.
Okay, so there's a rationale for them.
There is, for large trades.
Yeah.
However, dark pools also contribute to overall market fragmentation. And they raise concerns about transparency and price discovery because a significant chunk of trading activity is hidden from public view. Is the price discovered in the dark pool the true price?
A valid concern. How big are they in Europe?
They account for a smaller share of trading volume compared to the U.S., actually, partly due to MiFID II's double volume cap mechanism.
What's that?
It's a rule that limits how much trading in any given stock can occur on dark venues over a certain period. If the caps are breached, dark trading in that stock is suspended for a while.
Trying to push more volume back onto lit, transparent markets.
Exactly. It's this constant balancing act regulators face, enabling efficient execution for large trades versus maintaining overall market transparency and fair price discovery for everyone.
Okay, so we've established DBG has this powerful integrated model, these economic moats. But every big player still faces rivals. These moats, they provide significant protection, but they're not impenetrable. Let's look at DBG's actual market share in key segments to understand where these moats are strongest and where the competition is fiercest.
Good idea. Let's quantify the battlefield.
In cash equities trading stocks, the Recetra platform is the undisputed reference market for German equities. If you want to trade Siemens or VW shares, Zetra is the main place.
Dominant on its home turf.
Absolutely. Commanding about 90% of the trading turnover within Germany. Just to give a number, in April 2025 alone, Zetra recorded nearly $150 billion in equity trading turnover. Huge volume.
Okay. Dominant domestically. But what about Europe-wide?
That's where it gets more competitive. The pan-European cash equity market is highly fragmented thanks to MiFID II, as we discussed. In that wider market, Zetra's share of the total European value traded is around 14.7%.
Only 14.7%. Who's bigger?
Well, it puts it behind the consolidated Euronext group, which now owns exchanges in Paris, Amsterdam, Brussels, Milan, etc. Euronext holds about 28.7%, and also behind Cboe Europe, the MTF, which has around 24.4%.
Wow. So Zetra is strong at home, but number three in the broader European equities race.
Exactly. Strong at home, but part of a highly competitive landscape regionally. Now, where Deutsche Börse truly shines and maintains clear leadership is in derivatives.
Eurex territory.
Right. Eurex is the dominant force in the European listed derivatives market. It consistently maintains about a 70% market share in European equity derivatives, futures, and options on European stocks and indices. That compares to Euronext's roughly 30%.
70-30. It's a strong lead in a very lucrative market.
It is. This makes Eurex a critical venue for hedging and speculation in Europe. However, if you look globally, purely by the number of contracts traded.
Sheer volume.
DBG is a smaller player. In 2023, it ranked 13th globally by contracts traded, about 1.9 billion. That trails the big U.S. powerhouses significantly. CME Group had 6.1 billion contracts. ICE had 3.7 billion.
Okay, so dominant in European derivatives, but not the biggest globally in terms of volume.
Correct. And then in clearing the guaranteeing part, Eurex Clearing is the leading CCP in the Eurozone. It holds a position of systemic importance.
Systemically important. That's a regulatory designation with big implications.
It is. And remember, that 2017 European Commission decision to block the LSE Group merger.
Because of the clearing monopoly concerns.
Exactly. It was precisely because combining Eurex Clearing with LSEG's LCH would have created that de facto monopoly in clearing certain vital instruments. It's a testament to the strength and critical role of Eurex Clearing within the Eurozone.
That's a crucial point. And it leads us back to the question, why does Deutsche Börse maintain such strong positions, especially in these core areas like derivatives and clearing, despite all this fierce competition?
Yeah, what underpins that dominance?
It really comes down to those fundamental economic advantages we touched on, the moats, that are incredibly difficult for newcomers or even existing rivals to replicate.
So let's recap those moats.
Okay. First, as we discussed, powerful network effects. In the exchange business, particularly derivatives, liquidity is paramount. It's everything.
More liquidity attracts more traders, which creates more liquidity.
That powerful, virtuous cycle. Eurex is dominant in benchmark European derivatives, like futures on the Euro Stoxx 50 Index, makes it almost indispensable for many global players needed to hedge European exposure. Everyone wants to trade where the best prices and the most counterparties are readily available. That reinforces its market position constantly.
Makes sense. Moat number one, network effects.
Second, regulatory barriers. These are exceptionally high. The hurdles to entry for operating a full-service exchange, and especially a central counterparty like Eurex Clearing, are just monumental.
What kind of hurdles?
You need vast capital reserves, often billions of euros, to backstop trades in case of defaults. You need incredibly sophisticated, robust, and resilient technology that can handle extreme market stress without failing.
Can't afford downtime.
Absolutely not. And you need approvals from multiple stringent regulatory bodies across different jurisdictions who scrutinize every aspect of your operation and risk management. These requirements effectively limit the number of credible competitors. It creates a very exclusive, high-stakes club.
Okay, moat number two, regulatory barriers.
Third, the integrated value chain itself. DBG's vertical integration across the entire trade life cycle, pre-trade data, indices, trading, clearing, settlement custody, creates significant switching costs for clients.
We talked about that lock-in effect.
Exactly. The operational efficiencies, the ability to net margin requirements across different products, trading stocks and derivatives, for instance, the collateral benefits gained from using a single provider. It all makes it incredibly difficult and costly for major clients to unbundle these services and move significant parts of their business to competing providers.
It's just easier and often cheaper to stay within the DBG ecosystem.
For many core functions, yes. It's a powerful retention mechanism. So network effects, regulatory barriers, and the integrated value chain. Those are the core economic moats protecting DBG.
Okay, strong defenses. But who are the main attackers trying to breach those walls? Let's look at the key competitors and how DBG tries to differentiate itself.
Right. Euronext is the primary pan-European competitor, especially strong in cash equity trading and listing services across its multiple European exchanges.
Paris, Amsterdam, Milan.
Exactly. They've grown significantly, particularly after acquiring Borsa Italiana from the LSE Group. Well, Euronext has a larger aggregate footprint in cash equities across Europe now.
As those market share numbers showed.
It remains a distant competitor to Eurex in the more lucrative and globally relevant derivative space. That's where DBG's dominance is much clearer.
Okay, so Euronext is mainly a cash equity rival. What about LSE Group?
Ah, the London Stock Exchange Group. LSEG is a formidable, highly diversified global competitor. Very different profile now post-Refinitiv.
How so?
Well, they're strong in UK and Italian cash equities through the LSE and Borsa Italiana. They're a global leader in clearing through their majority ownership of LCH, especially in areas like interest rate swaps. And critically, they are a data and analytics powerhouse following that transformative acquisition of Refinitiv.
So LSEG is a major force in data now, like DBG wants to be with IMS.
Exactly. The repeated failed merger attempts between DBG and LSEG over the years highlight not just the intense rivalry, but also the significant antitrust hurdles to further consolidation at this top tier. Both are seen as too systemically important in key areas to be allowed to combine easily.
Two giants circling each other, then across the Atlantic.
You have the U.S. behemoths. CME Group in Chicago, the world's leading derivatives marketplace. They are particularly dominant in U.S. dollar-denominated products like interest rate futures and options.
A direct competitor for global derivatives flow.
Absolutely, especially attracting large international banks and funds. But what's interesting is their co-opetition we mentioned. DBG and CME have a data partnership. CME's historical data is accessible via DBG's A7 analytics platform. So rivals, but collaborating where it makes sense.
Okay. And the other big U.S. player.
Intercontinental Exchange, or ICE, based in Atlanta. They own the New York Stock Exchange, NYSE, a huge cash equity market. And ICE is dominant in energy derivatives, particularly Brent crude oil futures, the global oil benchmark.
So DBG faces very large, very well-established global competitors.
Definitely. And the shifting battleground here is crucial to understand. Competition is clearly moving away from just winning on individual products or venues.
Like having the fastest trading platform for one specific futures contract.
Towards offering integrated ecosystems. LSEG's Refinitiv acquisition created a data, analytics, and workflow behemoth, allowing them to embed themselves much deeper into their clients' operations.
Providing more than just execution.
Right. DBG's countermove, forming its IMS segment with SimCorp, ISS, COXX, Axioma, was a direct strategic response to this trend. It's no longer just about offering the cheapest or fastest trade execution, which is increasingly commoditized anyway.
So the fight is moving upstream and downstream from the trade itself.
Precisely. It's about providing the indispensable end-to-end software, data, analytics, and workflow ecosystem that underpins the entire investment process for the buy side. Creating that deep integration, that stickiness, and capturing higher value relationships, that's the new competitive frontier.
Okay. And what about pricing power? Where can DBG actually charge a premium, and where are they under pressure?
Their pricing power is strongest where they hold a dominant market position and benefit from those high barriers to entry we discussed. Think derivatives clearing through Eurex clearing. That's a critical service with few alternatives in the Eurozone.
So they can charge more there?
Relatively speaking, yes. Also, licensing their proprietary indices, like the DAX or the STXX indices. These are embedded in trillions of euros worth of investment products. So they command significant licensing fees.
Where is their pricing power weakest?
Clearly in cash equity trading. MiFID II-driven competition from MTFs and SIs has led to significant fee pressure and commoditization. It's a race to the bottom on execution fees sometimes.
Which is why they pivoted to IMS and data.
Exactly. In response, exchanges across Europe have increasingly turned to the sale of market data to bolster revenues and offset the decline in trading fees. But as we noted, this trend itself has drawn the attention of regulators and end users.
The controversy over data costs.
Right. There's a perception, rightly or wrongly, that market data has become disproportionately expensive. This is a critical point because if regulators were to intervene and impose price controls or caps on market data fees, it would pose a significant potential headwind for DBG's revenue growth, given its increasing reliance on these fees, especially within the IMS segment now.
Something to watch closely, though. Let's talk about the bottom line. Numbers often tell the clearest story, don't they? And Deutsche Börse's financials paint a picture of a company on a really strong trajectory, intentionally building resilience into its core business.
The numbers certainly back up the strategic narrative.
That they've demonstrated robust revenue and profitability trends looking back from 2020 to 2024. Their top-line net revenue, for instance, increased impressively. It went from $3.21 billion in 2020 up to $5.83 billion in 2024.
That's a big jump. What's the growth rate?
It represents about a 16% compound annual growth rate, or CAGR. That's the average annual rate it's grown over that four-year period. Pretty strong.
16% CAGR on the top line is very healthy for a company this size. What drove that?
It's a mix. In 2023, for example, they reported 17% growth. They broke it down as 5% from secular trends, things like the growth of ETFs driving index demand, outsourcing and fund services.
Underlying market growth.
Right. Then 7% came from cyclical factors, primarily that higher net interest income, the treasury result, thanks to rising rates.
The interest rate tailwind.
And 5% came from the initial consolidation of the SimCorp acquisition mid-year. Then in 2024, they saw another healthy 15% growth. That included 8% organic growth from the core businesses, plus the full-year impact of SimCorp coming through.
Okay, so a blend of organic growth, cyclical help from rates, and acquisition impact.
Exactly. And profitability has grown impressively right alongside revenue. EBITDA, that's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, a key measure of operational profit, rose from $1.87 billion in 2020 to $3.40 billion in 2024.
Also around a 16% CAGR.
Yeah, 16.1% CAGR for EBITDA. Net profit attributable to shareholders went from $1.08 billion to $1.95 billion over the same period, a 15.9% CAGR.
So profits growing strongly in line with revenue.
And importantly for investors, adjusted earnings per share, EPS, how much profit the company generates for each share, also grew significantly, from 6.59 in 2020 to 11.36 in 2024. That's a robust 14.6% CAGR. These numbers really demonstrate strong and consistent financial performance through a period of significant change.
They do. And what's particularly insightful here, I think, is the company's transparency regarding that treasury result, the NII from client cash.
How are they transparent about it?
They consistently provide figures that exclude this component. They show you the growth without treasury result. By doing this, they're deliberately showing you the underlying controllable growth of their core business, which they actually aim to grow organically at an 8% CAGR.
So they're saying, look, rates helped us, but here's how the real business is doing.
Exactly. It's an honest acknowledgement that the recent surge from higher interest rates, while very welcome financially, is a significant cyclical tailwind. It's not something they directly control or want to rely on entirely for their growth story.
Right. And that treasury result was pretty big, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. It reached $961.5 million in 2023 and $1.05 billion in 2024.
Uh-huh.
€1 billion just from interest on client cash. But again, this component is highly sensitive to central bank policy. If interest rates were to fall significantly, this revenue stream would naturally decline.
Understood. What about margins and efficiency?
Deutsche Börse also exhibits really strong operational leverage and impressive margin evolution. They've consistently shown an ability to grow revenues significantly while maintaining disciplined control over costs.
Meaning profits grow faster than revenues?
Essentially, yes. For example, in 2024, they achieved that 15% increase in net revenue with only a modest 3% rise in organic operating costs, excluding acquisitions. That leads to a disproportionate increase in profitability. That's operational leverage in action.
Impressive efficiency.
It is. Their adjusted EBITDA margin has been consistently high and remarkably stable, hovering around 58% over the past 5 years, and the operating margin has generally been around 40% for the last decade. That reflects excellent cost management and, importantly, the pricing power they have in certain segments.
58% EBITDA margin is very high. Okay,
yeah.
What about capital efficiency? How well do they use shareholder money?
In terms of capital efficiency and returns, the group generates strong returns on the capital employed. Their return on equity, ROE, which measures profit relative to shareholder equity, has been consistently high.
How high?
It averaged 18.7% between 2020 and 2024 and reached 19.6% on a trailing 12-month basis as of mid-2025.
How does that compare to rivals?
It compares very favorably. For instance, CME Group's ROE was around 13.4% over a similar period. So DBG appears to be using shareholder capital quite efficiently to generate profits.
To know.
Interestingly, just as a technical note, at the parent company level, ROE surged to an exceptionally high 49.1% in 2023. But that figure was influenced by internal profit transfers within the group structure, so it's not really representative of the broader group's operational ROE. The 19% figure is more relevant.
Got it. And cash flow. Is it a cash machine?
The business model is inherently highly cash generative. Cash flows from operating activities were very robust. $2.55 billion in 2023, $2.41 billion in 2024. This provides significant financial flexibility for reinvestment in the business, paying dividends, making acquisitions, or buying back shares.
Lots of options with that much cash. What about the balance sheet? I saw huge asset numbers.
Yeah, you might notice their balance sheet appears unique. They reported $237.7 billion in total assets against just $10.1 billion in equity in 2023. That looks incredibly leveraged at first glance.
It does, like a bank almost.
Right. But it's crucial to understand what those assets are. A substantial portion, the vast majority, in fact, are actually low-risk pass-through items related to their clearing and settlement functions.
Like what?
Primarily cash deposits held by market participants as collateral for their trades and securities held in custody for clients. These are not corporate assets in the traditional sense, and they don't represent corporate risk in the same way that, say, a manufacturing company's inventory or factories would.
Ah, so it's mostly client money and assets just passing through their system.
Exactly. A more relevant measure of their own corporate leverage is their net debt to EBITDA ratio.
Okay, what's that?
After the $3.9 billion debt-financed SimCorp acquisition, that ratio reached 2.2x. This is at the upper end of their own target range, which maxes out at 2.25x.
So they pushed leverage up for the acquisition?
They did. But management has explicitly committed to fast deleveraging as a key priority, using that strong cash flow to pay down debt quickly and bring the ratio back down comfortably within the target range. It demonstrates a prudent approach to financial health, even after a major acquisition.
Okay, so we have this robust financial picture, a clear strategic transformation underway. Where do they go from here? Deutsche Börse isn't just treading water, are they? They seem to have this very clear, ambitious map for the future.
Absolutely. It's all laid out in that Horizon 2026 strategy we keep mentioning. That's their roadmap.
And what are the targets, the big goals?
The headline targets are ambitious, aiming for 10% average annual net revenue growth and 11% average annual EBITDA growth between the end of 2022 and the end of 2026.
10% revenue growth annually. That's pretty aggressive for a company this size. How do they plan to get there?
The strategy rests on three core pillars. First, strong organic growth from the existing businesses, targeting 7% annually.
7% organic. What drives that?
They see ongoing drivers like the electronification of financial markets, more trading moving onto screens. The secular shift to passive investing, which fuels demand for their indices and ETFs, traded on Xetra. And the increasing need, post-financial crisis and with current volatility, for sophisticated risk management tools, which drives business to Eurex.
Okay, pillar one, solid organic growth.
Pillar two is the Investment Management Solutions, or IMS, segment. The SimCorp acquisition is expected to add about 3% to the group's annual revenue growth on top of the organic target. The goal here is to become truly indispensable, that integrated solutions provider for the buy side, basically the operating system for institutional finance.
So IMS adds another 3% growth, getting them to that 10% total target.
Roughly, yes. And the third pillar is digital leadership. This involves leading the charge in the digitalization of asset classes through platforms like D7.
What's D7?
D7 is their new digital post-trade platform. It aims to replace traditional paper-based securities issuance with digital instruments right from the start. It's foundational for their tokenization strategy. And they're also building out their new digital asset platform for crypto and eventually tokenized securities.
Okay, so organic growth, IMS driving buy-side solutions, and leading in digital assets.
That's the plan. The overarching strategic rationale is clear. Position BBG to capture the value that's migrating away from commoditized transaction execution towards the higher value data, analytics, software, and workflows that surround every single transaction. They want to make themselves indispensable throughout that entire life cycle.
Makes sense. Let's talk more about those big growth opportunities. What looks most promising?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, I think the most profound game-changing opportunity for Deutsche Börse lies in that digitalization of traditional financial assets.
tokenization.
Really? More than just growing their existing businesses? Potentially, yes, in the long run. This isn't just about adding crypto trading. It's about fundamentally rethinking how traditional assets, stocks, bonds, funds are issued, traded, cleared, settled, and held using DLT.
A whole new paradigm.
It could be. Imagine a world where issuing a bond takes minutes, not weeks, settles instantly, pays coupons automatically, and has compliance rules embedded in the token itself.
That would be revolutionary for capital markets.
It would. And DBG wants to be the regulated, trusted infrastructure provider for this new world. Their D7 platform is foundational, aiming to create the rails for a future where traditional securities exist as programmable digital tokens. If this tokenization trend truly takes off and becomes mainstream...
Which is still an if, I suppose.
It is still early days, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But if it happens, Deutsche Börse, by building the core infrastructure now, could secure its market leadership for decades. It's a massive strategic bet on the future plumbing of finance.
A very ambitious vision. What are other big growth areas?
Geographic diversification is important. They're actively expanding their IMS and FX segments into North America and Asia-Pacific.
Why?
To reduce their reliance on the Eurozone's macroeconomic health, which can be sluggish at times, and tap into faster-growing markets and client pools outside Europe. Data, analytics, and ESG monetization are another huge growth area.
Back to ISS, the OXX.
Right. That business is a critical growth engine. Remember that projected total addressable market of over $25 billion by 2029? There's substantial white space for growth, even within their existing clients.
Meaning they can sell more services to the clients they already have.
Exactly. They estimate ISS STOXX currently captures only about 17% of its existing clients' total spending on governance, ESG, index, and analytics services. That represents a $2.9 billion cross-selling opportunity right there.
Huge potential just from deepening existing relationships.
And ESG, environmental social governance, is clearly a strong secular tailwind. Investors globally are demanding more ESG data and tools. DBG is leveraging ISS's expertise here with new products like biodiversity indices, climate risk tools, the ESG Compass platform, helping investors navigate this complex landscape.
So, riding the ESG wave.
Definitely. And finally, post-trade services growth. That D7 platform we mentioned offers a digital native solution for the entire post-trade lifecycle. By making issuance and settlement faster, cheaper, and more automated, they increase efficiency for clients and create even greater stickiness within their ecosystem.
Integrating everything even more tightly.
That's the theme, integration and data.
Okay. Now, a company's capital allocation strategy, how it decides to spend its money, really tells you what it truly values, doesn't it? What its priorities are.
It's where the rubber meets the road, strategically.
Deutsche Börse seems to have a clear hierarchy here. They're balancing investing for growth with returning cash to you, the shareholder. What are the priorities?
Their top priority is organic growth, reinvesting back into their own businesses to develop new products, enhance technology, expand geographically. They earmarked a substantial $350, $400 million for this kind of investment in 2025 alone.
Okay, reinvesting first, then.
Then comes strategic mergers and acquisitions, M&A, like SimCorp. But they have strict criteria.
What are they?
The deal must promise a return on invested capital, ROIC, that exceeds their weighted average cost of capital, WACC, basically, earn more than it costs them to fund it within 3 to 5 years. And it needs to be accretive to earnings per share, EPS, meaning it adds to profit per share within 1 to 3 years. So disciplined M&A, not just empire building.
Good discipline. After M&A.
After funding organic growth and value-adding M&A, they prioritize a progressive dividend policy.
Progressive dividend means...
They modernized their policy in 2023. They now commit to paying out 30-40% of their net profit as dividends, and crucially, aim for a continuously increasing dividend per share each year.
Continuously increasing, that's a strong commitment.
It's a very strong signal of management's confidence in future earnings growth and stability. The proposed $4 per share dividend for the 2024 financial year marks the 10th consecutive annual increase. That's a solid track record for dividend growth investors.
10th increase. Nice. What's the final priority for cash?
Finally, if there's excess liquidity after all that, they consider share buybacks. These also return capital to shareholders by reducing the number of shares outstanding, boosting EPS.
And they've been doing buybacks.
Yes. A $300 million program was completed in early 2024. And then a new, larger Euro 500 million program was announced in February 2025. As of August 2025, they'd already repurchased about $300 million under that new program. So actively returning capital alongside investing for growth.
Okay, clear priorities. What about their M&A strategy going forward? More big deals like SimCorp?
Their strategy seems focused on targeted, value-accretive acquisitions that complement their existing businesses or fill specific gaps. Think SimCorp or smaller deals like Knipe, a fund data specialist,
Right.
or Funds DLT, a DLT platform for funds. For 2025, the primary focus seems to be successfully integrating SimCorp, that's a huge task, and potentially managing the exit of a minority shareholder in the ISS-DOXX business, which might involve listing a part of ISS-DOXX eventually.
Ah, interesting. An ISS-OXX IPO could unlock value.
It could. Also worth noting, the management change with Stefan Leithner becoming CEO in January 2025 is widely seen internally and externally as an endorsement of the current Horizon 2026 strategy. He was deeply involved in developing it, so expect continuity there.
Okay, strategic continuity. Now, even with a strong strategy and financials, there are always risks. No matter how strong a company, there are external forces, internal challenges.
Absolutely. Understanding these potential headwinds and risks is crucial for a complete picture. Nothing goes up in a straight line forever.
So what keeps DBG management awake at night? Let's start with regulatory and political risks.
Right. A big one is that persistent regulatory scrutiny over market data fees we discussed. If regulators do decide to impose caps or controls, that could directly hit a key growth and profit area. Especially for IMS.
Okay, the data fee risk. What else?
Geopolitical instability is always a factor. The war in Ukraine, broader economic downturns in the EU or globally, these can negatively impact trading volumes, market sentiment, and overall activity on their platforms.
Market-wide shocks. Yes,
and changes to clearing and settlement rules. While EMIR 3.0 has recently benefited Eurex Clearing by encouraging Euro Clearing to move onshore, future regulatory shifts could potentially reverse course or introduce new complexities or costs. Regulation is a double-edged sword.
It giveth and it taketh away. What about competitive and technological risks?
Competition is intense and ever-present. From other global exchange groups like LSEG, CME, ICE, from those agile MTFs like Cboe Europe constantly chipping away at cash equity market share, they can't stand still.
And in technology.
The rise of decentralized finance, DeFi, and new DLT-based models presents a potential long-term disruptive threat. Could new models eventually bypass traditional infrastructure like exchanges and CCPs altogether? DBG needs to engage with this, not just dismiss it.
Cannibalize yourself before someone else does.
Perhaps. Or integrate the new tech, which they seem to be trying to do. And of course, cybersecurity and operational resilience are paramount. Their operations are fundamentally dependent on secure, reliable IT systems. A major outage, a successful cyber attack.
Could be catastrophic.
Not just for DBG, but potentially for the entire European financial market, given their systemic importance. Their increasing reliance on third-party cloud providers like Google also creates a new vector of systemic risk.
Yeah.
What if the cloud provider has a major issue?
Concentrated risk there. What about economic and market risks?
Despite this strategic shift towards recurring revenue, a substantial portion of their business, especially trading and clearing, is still exposed to market cycles. Trading volume volatility directly impacts revenues and profits in that segment.
Can't escape it entirely.
Not entirely. And as we discussed, that highly sensitive treasury result from the security services segment is at risk if interest rates decline significantly from their current elevated levels. That billion-euro tailwind could easily become a headwind.
Okay. Finally, strategic and execution risks. Risks they create themselves.
Yes. The successful integration of that huge $3.9 billion SimCorp acquisition is absolutely paramount. Failure to achieve the projected cost and revenue synergies, integrate the technology platforms effectively, or successfully merge the corporate cultures. That could be a significant setback and a drag on performance for years.
Big acquisitions are always risky to integrate.
Always. Mm-hmm. There's also the potential diversification risk, a term Peter Lynch coined.
Diversification, meaning diversifying badly.
Right. Diversifying into too many unrelated or poorly understood businesses, risking a dilution of management focus and resources away from the core, highly profitable franchises. Managing fundamentally different business models like subscription software development versus running critical market infrastructure requires diverse expertise and could potentially strain management attention if not handled well. They need to prove they can run IMS as effectively as they run Eurex.
A lot to manage. Okay, let's wrap up with valuation. How does the market value DBG stock right now?
Looking at standard metrics, DBG currently trades at a trailing 12-month price earnings, or PE, ratio of approximately 23.8 times.
24 times earnings. Is that high or low?
It's actually above its 10-year historical average PE of around 21.0x. This indicates that the market currently has quite high expectations baked in for continued growth and the successful execution of that Horizon 2026 strategy. The market believes the story, essentially.
How does it compare to its peers?
Its PE is broadly in line with the big U.S. derivatives-focused peers like CME and ICE, which also command premium multiples due to their strong market positions and profitability. It trades at a significant premium to Euronext, however, which is more focused on the lower-margin cash equities business. Interestingly, DBG's price-sales ratio is lower than its U.S. peers, reflecting a different overall business mix and perhaps slightly lower group margins compared to the pure derivatives giants.
Okay. Is there a case that the stock is undervalued if you look at its different parts?
That's where some of the parts, or SOTP analysis, comes in. The argument is that the IMS segment, with its high proportion of recurring SaaS and data revenue, should logically command a much higher valuation multiple, perhaps more akin to pure play software or data companies like MSCI or S&P Global, which often trade at 30x PE or higher.
So the market might be undervaluing IMS within the larger DBG structure?
Potentially. The conglomerate structure might be applying a lower blended multiple to the whole group. A potential IPO of a minority stake in ISS, CSX, as we mentioned, could be one way to unlock or highlight this latent value. It would force the market to value that specific high-growth, high-margin business separately.
Interesting possibility. So what are the key drivers for the valuation going forward?
It really boils down to execution on the Horizon 2026 strategy. Can they deliver that 10% revenue growth? The prevailing interest rate environment will also be key, especially for the treasury result component. And overall market volatility will continue to influence the trading and clearing segment's performance and sentiment around the stock.
And the dividend?
The dividend yield is relatively modest, around 1.6% based on the 4.0 proposed for 2024. But, as we said, the progressive dividend policy, the commitment to continuously increase the dividend per share, makes it an attractive proposition for long-term dividend growth investors, rather than those seeking high current income. #outro.
Wow. What a journey deep into the heart of financial markets. We've really seen Deutsche Börse Group as this giant that's evolving right before our eyes, haven't we? Shifting its center of gravity decisively towards data, towards software, towards resilient recurring revenues.
Yeah, it's a fascinating transformation, all while navigating this incredibly complex regulatory and technological landscape. It's a strategic pivot that's clearly not just about survival in a changing world, but about actively trying to lead the next generation of finance.
It feels very proactive.
Indeed. From its foundational role in traditional trading and clearing, which remains critically important to its aggressive push into digital assets and creating these indispensable buy-side solutions through IMS, Deutsche Börse isn't just observing the future of finance, they're out there actively building it.
And that deep integration of services, skillfully driven by those strategic acquisitions and the unwavering focus on controlling the entire value chain, that really seems to create an almost unassailable competitive moat in their core areas.
It does. It makes them an increasingly critical, almost unavoidable piece of the global financial puzzle, especially within Europe.
So as we wrap up, let's consider that huge potential we discussed around tokenized securities and digital assets. Imagine a future, maybe not tomorrow, but down the road, where Deutsche Börse's D7 platform, or its successors, actually becomes the de facto standard infrastructure for issuing, trading, and settling nearly all financial instruments, not just for Germany or Europe, but maybe globally.
A truly global digital financial market infrastructure.
Could this essentially make it something akin to a central bank of digital assets and financial information, transcending its current role as an exchange and market infrastructure provider, and fundamentally reshaping global finance as we know it? What would that even mean for the very definition of a market itself?
That is a really profound thought to ponder, isn't it? The lines could blur significantly.
Definitely something to think about. We hope this deep dive has given you, our listeners, a fresh perspective on the real engine room of global finance, hopefully providing insights and connections you won't find just anywhere.
We aim to simplify the complex and highlight what truly matters in DBG's evolution.
Until next time, keep digging, keep learning, and keep asking those big, essential questions about how our financial world works.